Welcome to Health Connections, a show about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. You know, a year goes by pretty quickly. Health Connections launched 1 year ago. And in that 12-month span, we've seen three separate attempts to repeal, replace, or repair the Affordable Care Act. As we hit this one-year mark, Dr. Carol Myers and I wanted to take a look at where those efforts stand now and outline some of the unanswered questions, things we still want to know about a year later. Dr. Myers, welcome.
Thank you. So pleased to be here.
And happy anniversary.
I know. We'll have to go out and celebrate.
I was about to say we should be wearing formal wear. We'll have to have a gala and a red carpet and the whole deal. But in the meantime, what this made me think about was this topic we've talked about over the course of the past year. It's been a very eventful year for health policy at the federal level, so much so that we're actually breaking the subject down into two episodes this time and our next installment as well. Let's begin with threats to Medicaid funding, which you've told me have not abated.
Yes, Brandon, I think more specifically, we had a little lull in the uncertainty that we dealt with last summer about the Affordable Care Act repeal, replace, and repair. With the launch of President Trump's budget proposal for 2019, we now see Medicaid on the chopping block again. So the fight over health care reform is far from over, and once again, we're using the same word. The outcome is uncertain.
Medicaid, we should point out, too, we've talked about this in previous installments of Health Connections, but it covers one in six Tennesseans, provides health coverage to primarily children, people on long-term care, the disabled, and low-income Tennesseans as well. So this is a program that affects a not insignificant portion of the state's population. What are some of the concerns about Medicaid right now?
Okay. Well, first, Brandon, let's lay the groundwork, which you already did with the exception of pregnant women are also one of the major Medicaid categories. But also would like to remind our listeners that Medicaid, along with Medicare, is what we call an entitlement program. And entitlement programs are not subject to annual congressional budget appropriations. It's a given that we will fund those programs. But some of the things that are concerning Americans are more than two-thirds of our federal budget now is for entitlement spending. And what we see across the political spectrum is an agreement that we need to get entitlement spending in check. The agreement falls apart as to how we will do that. And what we're going to talk about today is the 2019 budget proposal that President Trump released in late June. Currently, we're operating on under a budget that was passed in February of 2018. The federal law says we have to have a budget in place by April. The major concern, the backdrop to the budget, is the ballooning national deficit and debt. And I find it really interesting that both have been exacerbated by the tax cuts that were passed at the end of 2017. Many analysts have said that at least $1 trillion will be added to the national debt over the next 10 years as a result of the tax bill. Others are saying it could be as high as $1.2 trillion. But let's talk about the budget proposal from President Trump. The proposal outlines a vision for managing spending on entitlement programs, and what's so important for our discussion is that it puts Medicare and Medicaid back on the chopping blocks. It calls for $5.4 trillion in cuts over 10 years. The lion's share is for Medicaid, about $1.5 trillion, $537 billion for Medicare, and then the other programs. So it puts limits on per capita payments or allows the states to turn Medicaid into a block grant program. We previously talked, there's nothing inherently bad. It's different to have a block grant program or to have a per cap program. What concerns me about how it's presented in the Graham-Cassidy bill is it's not just a new form of funding, it's a dramatic decrease in the amount of funding over 10 years. It is a very deliberate attempt to decrease the federal government's responsibility for paying for this joint federal-state program. That's my concern. The budget, just so everyone remembers, is not law. It's just one step in a many-month process. The president releases a budget proposal, but it's Congress who acts on it. Congress is who controls appropriations.
That's often where we see a lot of the workshopping, hammering out, getting a vision or general goals translated into actual allocations, actual numbers.
Right. It's where the real work is done. Mm-hmm. But I also want you to think about a very consequential event that's going to be happen between now and when the budget's hammered out. And that's we have the midterm elections. So that has impact on both ends. It has impact on how much are people willing to do in advance of the midterm elections. You know, what looks good back home?
Well, you and I just spent some time talking about how the budget process is primarily congressional. That's where a lot of these fights are going to take place on Capitol Hill. But there are also things that can be done and have been done at the White House level. The president can issue what are called executive orders. And you say that we've already seen some efforts on that level toward the ACA and toward Medicaid.
Right, Brandon. We can see executive orders, things that the president signs, and we'll talk about those. We can see decisions, particularly in rulemaking, that other parts of the executive branch, in this case CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So let's talk about some of the things that have had some impact. It's my perspective that executive orders are being used very deliberately to undermine the Affordable Care Act. The Department of Justice, a part of the executive branch, recently asked the courts to invalidate the entire Affordable Care Act now that the individual mandate's gone. President Trump signed in an executive order directing governmental agencies to disregard the ACA, and here's a quote, to the maximum extent permitted by law. So far, there's not been a lot of teeth to this action, but it certainly telegraphs a tent.
Seems to signal a principle.
Yeah. Now, I did mention that I think rulemaking could be far more substantial. Technical but highly consequential details governing implementation and operation of the ACA were codified into rules after the enactment of the Affordable Care Act during the Obama administration. The Trump administration is now working to change many of these rules. I can't speculate as to motivation, but that process is underway. The end result could be some people actually seeing lower premiums and older, sicker people seeing increased out-of-pocket expenses. Now, someone listening is going to say that sounds contradictory, but we see this more and more, whether it's an intended or unintended consequence, that certain groups are favored, and in my mind, unfavored groups are even more unfavored. Executive actions are being used to limit the number of people participating in the health insurance exchanges.
We spent, of course, the bulk of this conversation talking about the federal government's role in Medicaid, but I think you made a key statement a little earlier when you said this is a joint federal-state program. A lot of this is on the shoulders of the 50 states. We've seen a lot of movement in some directions on the state level, including Medicaid expansion or moves toward that direction. So what's happening on the state level?
Well, some of the news is encouraging, Brandon. And one of the things is I'd like to think that healthcare is not a partisan issue, that it's not red or blue, but it's a people issue. And I think this idea is bearing out a little bit in what we're seeing in the states. Virginia, a very red state, just expanded Medicaid. Three other states are working on Medicaid expansion. So what we're seeing early on, it was primarily blue states, and now red states are saying, wait a second, here's an opportunity for us to do something. Actually, the finances are pretty good, and it's happening. Now, there's 13 pretty diehard states that aren't moving in that direction, Tennessee being one of them, but we are seeing movement around Medicaid expansion. A judge ordered the governor of Maine to honor the results of a statewide referendum on expanding Medicaid. Voters in deeply red Idaho and Utah will be faced with similar referendums in the fall. We'll have to watch the outcome of those votes. Also, CMS is taking actions to continue to support Medicaid or prevent the erosion. A couple examples. Kansas was denied a request to impose a 3-year lifetime limit on Medicaid benefits. Mississippi was warned by CMS that their contemplated work requirements would not be approved. And this is in part because they have some of the lowest income thresholds for Medicaid eligibility in their state. States are considering laws to preserve the Affordable Care Act or key provisions. enact state-based mandates. As of today, only Massachusetts has that, and they had it, of course, before the Affordable Care Act. But we're hearing rumblings from some of the state. There's the development of state-based reinsurance programs to counteract some of the undermining of the exchanges that we saw from the Trump administration last year in the fall, fund state promotion and support of ACA enrollment, and then to guarantee the cost-sharing subsidies to the insurance companies. So all in all, I do see some encouraging signs, Brandon. But I would say to our listeners, we need to be vigilant. Healthcare coverage really matters. That's where I start. As a country, we do not have a consensus or a vision about the role of government in the provision of healthcare, particularly for the most needy people. We must be smart about policy and fiscally responsible. I do care that we maintain programs that are sustainable, that aren't just wishes and flashes in the pan. As a country, I know we can do better than this, but we have to start those conversations.
As we conclude this first year of Health Connections and look into year two, a lot of uncertainty in that first year. Looks like some of those issues obviously not going away. I'm sure it'll be a busy second year as well. As always, Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing, thank you for applying some perspective to this issue, and I look forward to hearing more from you in our next edition, which will take a closer look at Medicare. Dr. Myers, thanks.
Thank you, Brandon.